95 days, no arrests, no Nancy Guthrie, and now the FBI director is absolutely blasting the Pima County sheriffs, and no one can seem to find the people or persons responsible for this awful crime.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. Hard to believe, but tonight we are approaching the 100-day mark of the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie. As you'll recall, it all went down the late hours of January 31st, but really into the wee early morning hours of February 1st of this year. That's when Nancy Guthrie comes home, and there's this person seen on the Nest camera, and then she disappears, really, from the face of the earth. No one has seen her since, and we are coming up on that 100-day mark, which is really hard to believe. A lot of new information that we're getting you caught up on. More than 300 new tips pour in just in the last month, so this is far from over in terms of the public giving tips to law enforcement. Got the FBI directors, I said, blasting Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos. You've got a new masked prowler spotted in the area. Investigators continue to analyze DNA, and Sheriff Chris Nanos, I just mentioned his name. Now there's a real effort underway to get him recalled. So here to help us break this all down, we've got the dynamic power team. We've got the godfather of true crime. Here he is. It's been a minute. Welcoming back to the show, Detective Phil Ramos, three-time Las Vegas Officer of the Year, infiltrated the Cuban mob. Then he was a homicide detective and has done a lot of other things in between. Next up, you've got a retired lieutenant from Pima County. Used to work for Sheriff Chris Nanos. This is Lieutenant Bob Krieger, as I said, former SWAT commander, and keeping us up to date as to what is going on. And then in the same world as Phil Ramos, you've got, ooh, he just disappeared on me as I was about to introduce him, retired homicide detective Kurt Dabb, who will no doubt bounce back in. Bob, let me just start with you. Typically, I reserve the opening remarks for the godfather, but what is the mood? You're in Tucson. What is the mood in Tucson? I mean, are people still talking about it, you know, at the supermarket, at Bash's, Ralph's, whatever it is? I mean, is it still being discussed? And then, you know, your counterparts who are still in Pima County, are you guys still talking about this?
Yeah, it's still getting conversation. There's not as much, just because there's really nothing new to report on. I think everybody knows that right now. But for whatever reason, in the last few days, I've gotten some additional calls, some folks who have, maybe it's because of getting close to that 100-day mark, but it's still in the ether for people, not nearly like it was, but it's still there. It's still being investigated by the folks in the task force, and they're going to keep doing that until it's solved one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt, I just asked Bob, and so I'm curious, you know, you guys hang out in the same circle, but I'm sure you know different people, but are you hearing any talk about Nancy Guthrie? I mean, it was the only thing everyone was talking about close to 100 days ago, and now the case is going a little bit dormant or quiet, but what is the cooler talk in Tucson like right now?
I reached out to some of my former coworkers, and they're pretty much keeping mum. I'm just really surprised. I, you know, truly thought that we'd be able to bring this to a resolution by now. I'm just really surprised. But they're keeping their lips sealed. The task force is still going full and strong, so we'll just have to stand by.
And the task force, forgive me, but do we know sort of who makes up this task force? Because you've got Tucson PD, obviously Pima, and then you've got all the you know, Oro Valley and the towns, Marana, that surround Tucson. Who's on this task force?
As far as I know, and, you know, Bob could correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's a couple of homicide detectives from the Pima County Sheriff's Department, one that probably has 15 years in homicide, one of the best homicide detectives I ever worked for, and one or two others, and just the FBI. I don't know if they called in any other detectives from other local agencies. I think, you know, what the heck, you might as well give it a shot, but I don't know if that's been done.
Phil Ramos, to you, you know, in your line of work, it's the first 48 hours, and now we're coming up to the first 100 days. What do you say about that? I mean, it's a huge gap of time. Basically, and we'll get to this in a minute, Kash Patel, the FBI director, said, you guys blew it, man. We were ready to get a plane to fly DNA out within the first 48 hours. You didn't do it. And now we're almost 100 days out, 95 days. I mean, what happens to an investigation 100 days in, Phil?
Well, there's a sad truth that has to be told, and we'll probably get into that in a little bit, about the real lack of cooperation between the FBI and local agencies. It's one of these dark secrets that those of us who've been involved in task forces, and I've been on a bunch of them, know directly about. But that aside, the amount of time that has passed has really caused a lot of issues with, are we doing the right thing? We still don't know what they know. But what we do know is there hasn't been any progress at all. We have no idea who the guy on the Ring doorbell was. We have no idea what happened in the moments from her being dropped off until, you know, her pacemaker stopped communicating. There's just so many unknowns that I feel for these guys. I mean, they're sitting there scratching their heads going, what have we missed? As long as there's tips still coming in, then you still have ways to go. You still have things to follow up on. But at this amount of time, there's a lot of frustration with the guys that are working this.
Yeah, I mean, Phil, let me pry that open a little bit as a journalist. So you say it's a kind of a dirty old secret. I mean, is this kind of thing that also went on between Vegas PD and the FBI? Do local law enforcement just not like to play with the FBI? Does the FBI come in too heavy-handed? What is it?
It's a combination of things. I mean, I'm talking about going back to the 80s when we had drug interdiction task forces. And it's when you got a task force going, the FBI is always going to be the big kids on the block. The locals are always going to be the locals. Most of the time, the soldiers get along with each other, but the department heads are always going to be button heads because we're the FBI. And, well, we're just the local cops. And that mindset trickles down to some of the agents, and there's not 100% cooperation between the agents and the detectives and the investigators. The truth is we tolerate each other. The FBI's got the bigger toys and better pieces of equipment. But for the most part, there's always a little bit of tension there, and it's I've hesitated all this time to bring it up, but I'm sure that it has occurred, and that's just a fact of law enforcement life. When the FBI comes in, they're the big guys and we're the little brothers.
It's like that with network news and local news. The network guys come and local guys get pushed out of the way, which drives you crazy. But I guess it happens in different places. Someone commented that Savannah left the Today Show early. I did not hear about that. I did not see that. If anyone in STS Nation, you guys are part of this show, let me know in the chat. But I did see someone mention that. Then there's this comment. Still, Bob, as far as I know, the Cajun Navy and others have not really been allowed. And here, Lady Belisa here, I wish they'd accept offers from volunteer search and rescue to look for her in the desert. Is that something, Bob, in your opinion, that they should be doing? Should they be opening this up to public searchers who want to help look for her?
Yes. Yeah, I've talked about that a few times in the last couple of days. I guess that just popped up recently. That the Cajun Navy is asked to come back in again. I guess they were shot down early on in the investigation by Sheriff Nanos, and they're asking again. And it's, I don't understand why at this point you would say no. We've talked, I know, Joel, about how big the desert is, how even big the neighborhood is, and just a lot of those areas. The more eyes, the more resources that are out there, whether they're law enforcement or civilians in the public out there doing an organized search, it can't hurt. If they don't find anything, great. If they find something, how awesome is that? All of that being said, well, you know, if anyone from the Cajun Navy is listening, the areas out in the desert, they're public lands. They don't need permission from anyone to do this. They could go out. They, quite honestly, I would hope they are, because, again, I've talked about it a little bit, that's just extra sets of eyes looking in places where even with the amount of resources the FBI has, and we could take every federal agent in the country and we still couldn't do a organized search of the entire desert, yeah. You know? So the short answer is they should be out there. They should be accepting those offers from these folks. And it's not like they're, you know, wackadoodles. These are organized folks who have done this around the country, and they have a system in place to assist law enforcement.
Yeah. So Sheriff Chris Nanos, I know you're watching your two favorites, Krieger and Dab. If you're watching, let him in. And knowing the good people of Tucson, they're probably out there searching. There's a question from Kelly McLellan, and again, we're going to dig into this, and the COE has a bunch of video clips we're going to look at. But what about this, Kurt Dab? Does anybody on the panel, you here, think it would have made a difference if the FBI, according to Cash Patel, they literally had a jet ready to go with the DNA to Quantico, to the FBI headquarters, to their lab? Would that have made a difference as opposed to Nanos sending it to whatever private lab it went to in Florida and the quibbling that went back and forth?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit biased here, because I guess you'd have to be specific. You know, what difference are they wondering would be made? Would it have been quicker to get it shipped out? Absolutely. It would have been in D.C. in 4 hours. But DLI, DNA Laboratories International, out of, I think it's Deerfield Beach, Florida, they are the top of the top as far as DNA, as far as sequencing, as far as the number of loci that they're able to obtain. When I was working, you know, early on in 2009, my first stint in homicide, I think we were only getting 13 to 15 loci, which are, you know, matches in DNA. Different particulates in the DNA create different signatures. And I think now, you know, they're up to close to 30. And I know the FBI has, you know, top scientists, but I think everybody knows the limitations on government funding and government agencies, where compare that to the private sector, where, you know, they might have a lot more money. They're able to pay their scientists a little bit more. So again, it might have got there faster, but I trust in DLI. They've come up with some pretty spectacular pieces of evidence in cases that, you know, I specifically sent to them. So
that's great. And now I'm writing down the information, because I'm going to try to head up there. It's not far from where I'm at. So Dab, you and I have to have a little conversation after this. I don't know if you know anyone in the lab, but maybe help me get in there.
I used to know one of the scientists there. So, but I've got some contacts.
All right. I'm gonna pick your brain right after this. Torchlight Girl, Joel and team, and the Guthries, can they hire their own search teams? I mean, Phil Ramos, what about that? You just heard Bob Krieger saying it is public land. It is a massive swath of land. And obviously, Savannah Guthrie has the financial means, you know, to pay for things. What about that? Are you surprised that maybe she hasn't done that yet? Or maybe we just don't know. I mean, I think we would know about it, but should she do that?
I'm a little surprised that, and Bob was spot on, there's several volunteer citizens groups that are made up of former search and rescue guys, that they know what they're doing. You know, we've got one out here, Red Rock Search and Rescue. They go out on their own with missing persons, and they do a great job. Our search and rescue team assists them whether it's on horseback or air support. But he's right. I mean, this is public land. Anybody can go out there and start looking that if they want. Mm. Judging from the friction that's going on, you know, the department head may send somebody out there to the head of the citizens group and give them a hard time. But bottom line is, you can't stop a citizen from doing a good deed on public land if they're not trespassing on any land that someone says, I don't want them out here. That, I mean, that's just the bottom line.
Yeah. Phil, what about this? The COE is now confirming this, as a few others are in the chat. Savannah left a Today Show set abruptly 90 minutes into the show. It's unusual, but co-host Craig Melvin said she had to leave early and would be back. That's very unusual. I mean, I spent this be 30 years in broadcast news. I can't ever remember a time where, you know, I mean, there have been times where people have had family emergencies, but it's usually that where someone leaves the set, especially on a national show. I don't know. I'm thinking that maybe they got some news today. Something, I mean, something big would have to take her off the set, don't you think?
Yeah, you would think that. I mean, that's a pretty obvious incident that occurred. So something big had to have happened and had been passed on to her to cause her to do that. But that's a lot of speculation on what it could be. Had she made any more videos today?
I haven't seen anything. And look, it could be, her child was sick. I mean, stuff like that happens. And I don't care if you're hosting today's show, you're still going to go take care of your child. It could be a million different things. But obviously the spotlight is on her. And I didn't even know about it until STS Nation told us. But it is true. Apparently Savannah Guthrie left. They say she's going to be back in the chair tomorrow. You know, everyone's going to be watching that. The Dream Team panel is back. Let's go. Here we go. So Bob Krieger, KVOA reported this week, just in the last day or two, that in April, I think more than 300 new tips came in just in April alone. And that adds to the approximately 23,000 tips. My question is, are you surprised that 300 more tips have come in, you know, at this close to 100 day mark now? And what are you doing with those 300 tips?
I'm not surprised at all. I think folks, you know, you look at the number of views, podcasts like this, the news networks are still getting, they're still talking about it. So it's kind of still in the public conscious. I think as long as folks feel like they can help, they're going to keep calling in those tips. Hopefully these tips are more focused. You know, those first 23,000, I'm sure a lot of them were kind of out there. But that being said, it doesn't mean that they're wrong. I think they're going to keep coming in as long as folks are talking about it. And what are they doing with them? The same thing they did with those first 20,000. They're going to keep working them. They're going to triage them, see which ones they put at the top of the list to look into first and go from there. And again, that's the good thing about the task force, because it's not only the investigators working those tips. You've got analysts, you've got some civilian contractors, things like that, who can also go through those. So there's a lot more eyes going into that, and then they can push it out to the investigators and say, hey, this one is probably a little more important. Let's look into it a little bit sooner.
All right, so Lee from Tennessee. Kurt, I'm going to throw two at you here. This is the first one. Do you think it would have been this kind of along the lines of the DNA if they threw up a chopper pilot earlier, the veteran Pima pilot who could have flown search right away? Is that something that could have changed the course of this investigation, Kurt? Let's start there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you want all of the resources available to you to be out operational as the situation is occurring, not 2, 3, 4 hours later. So yeah, absolutely, it would have helped. And if I was the case officer on this, you know, well, I don't know if I would have lasted that much longer, that long as the case officer. I don't... See, Bob's a prototypical perfect. Look at him. He's, you know, clean. He's I'm not that guy.
After this latest Trump shooting, I was thinking a lot about Krieger, because those SWAT guys, God bless them. They get up there. They ran up there right in front. Yeah. With those helmets on, that would have been our man, Bob Krieger, up there. So that job takes a lot of courage. I was going to use a different word. Then Bree, Kurt, said there are literally no suspects, no one that they're looking at. Here we go. This is Bree right here. There are literally no suspects. I mean, I don't know for sure that we know that, Kurt, but it sure seems that way. It sure sounds that way. Your thoughts on close to 100 days, 5 days from now, and this is the highest profile missing persons case arguably ever, and they've got nothing to go on. What do you say?
It sucks. It sucks for the family, you know, first of all. But as an investigator, it really sucks if you can't come up with any sort of information. I mean, look, when Phil and I would go investigate homicides, you don't know shit from Shinola. You don't know who the bad guy is, what his association is. You don't know who the shooter is, what their association is with anything. You don't even have names sometimes. And I've investigated some pretty complicated homicides with zero information to go on. And literally within 24 hours, usually within the first couple of hours, we've got information. We've got a suspect. So this is extremely perplexing for this veteran homicide detective, how they do not have any suspects. They may have investigative leads. Those two guys, you know, that were pulled over earlier in the two separate, you know, SWAT operations, you know, those guys were interviewed. They were forensically processed and let go, and then nothing. And nothing else since. I just find that extremely hard to believe. And if they, trust me, if they did have suspects, they would be moving on it and we would know about it. Yeah. So that's a big tell right there. 100 days in and Spaceballs. You guys find anything yet? We ain't found shit.
Yeah, we would definitely know because they would want us to know. Mia Dallasite, I just can't believe they have nothing. Here's a person that is not a fan of Cash Patel, but this is a super chat. I just saw an article from News Nation, Todd Blanche, Attorney General, saying there's no friction. So, I mean, there's a lot of politics involved in this as well. And Cash Patel is going to get up there since there are no leads, and he's not going to take the blame. He's going to say, look, it's all Pima County's fault. To what extent? Personally, I don't trust any of these people. That's my personal. I trust the Bob Kriegers and the Kurt Dabbs of the world, but I'm not going to trust what Chris Nanos is necessarily telling me or Cash Patel. So to both of them. But here's a story from NBC News. This kind of lays out what happened. Cash Patel appeared on Sean Hannity's podcast, and this was the result. Let's watch it together.
Released podcast, FBI Director Cash Patel raising new criticism about law enforcement cooperation in the unsolved disappearance of Nancy Guthrie, mother of our colleague Savannah.
The first 48 hours of anyone's disappearance are the most critical.
Patel tells Sean Hannity that the Pima County, Arizona Sheriff's Department waited too long to engage the FBI.
We're here to help. What do you need? What can we do? And for 4 days, we were kept out of the investigation.
Nancy Guthrie was reported missing on Sunday, February 1st. However, the Pima County Sheriff said they called the FBI one day later on Monday.
That morning, it wasn't days later that we contacted that. That morning, we contacted the FBI.
And that Tuesday, the sheriff and a Tucson-based FBI official held a joint press conference. The director praises the Bureau for the biggest lead in the case.
When we were finally let in, Sean, look what we did. We went in and got the Ring doorbell. And we said, hey, is anyone talking to Google?
The FBI contacted Google, and they recovered those chilling images from the door camera system.
That's why you have that image, because the FBI worked with Google to put that image out.
That suspect remains unidentified 3 months later. The director also cited differences over handling DNA evidence. Pima County chose a Florida lab it regularly used.
We would have analyzed it within days and maybe gotten better information or more information. Our lab's just better than any other private lab out there. And we didn't get a chance to do that. So I understand everybody's frustration.
Phil Ramos, your response. I mean, the sad thing about this is they're fighting on both sides, politics on both sides. And I don't mean like Republican, Democrat, but just, you know, saving face on both sides. And Nancy Guthrie and her family are stuck in the middle of this, but your response to what you just saw?
It just goes back to what I said earlier about the big kids on the block, you know, that I'm with Kurt that if they believe that lab is just as well equipped as the FBI, then what's the difference? In our experience, we use Othram a lot here in Vegas, and they are top-notch, and they are the best. But when you've got something this critical, this high profile, then why not use the FBI? They're going to have a little better screwdriver than everybody else does. And so it would make more sense to me to get the FBI involved right away and see what the results are. We don't know what DNA was processed. We still don't know if there was suspect DNA in the house. I don't see how there couldn't have been suspect DNA in the house. It just, with the techniques that they use today, there's going to be a transfer somewhere from that bad guy. And, you know, let's jump back to the no suspects. They have a suspect. They just don't know who he is. That guy on the video is a suspect. It's just they're throwing their hands up. But who the hell is this guy? And why don't we know who he is? But that's all they can say right now.
Phil, have you changed your mind at all? I mean, most of you guys, and I think you included, originally did not think this guy was any sort of real or people. We don't know. Professional, just kind of a hack. Is this hack just getting away with this at this point?
Yeah, I still think, and we talked about this early on within the first couple of weeks, I think he's dead. I think that he brought so much embarrassment to whoever put this together, if it was an organized incident, that they whacked him because he screwed it up. I don't think he had any kind of level of expertise to pull something off like this by himself. I absolutely think there are at least two or three other people involved. But him getting his face plastered all over the country was a big mistake. If we go to that conspiracy theory that these were some bigwigs involved, if it was the cartel and this was a cartel-initiated incident, then they're going to look at this guy and say, you screwed up, boom, you're dead. And I still think that's the case. But it's not a matter of how experienced he was. He's gotten away with it. There's, I mean, no other way to put it. I mean, he's gotten away with it so far.
Racer Girl bringing up an interesting comment here. Let's start at the beginning, which is the 911 call that would have to have come from Nancy Guthrie if there was a medical emergency, and then go from there. I mean, Bob, just to broaden this out, how often during the course of these coming up to 100 days do you have to go back? Or Kurt, let me throw this to you, because this is more your world. How many times during the course of this 100 days do you have to go back to, like, the one-minute mark and start again from, like, that one-minute mark?
It's constantly going on, especially in an investigation like this. And I know the detective that's over at the task force, and I know that there's no doubt that he's doing that. But, yeah, it's something that has to occur on the daily, especially when leads dry up. You know, you're going to be gone for the weekend. You might be sick on Monday or Tuesday, you know, take yourself a 4-day weekend and get some rest, and you go back to work and still nothing. You've got to go back and you've got to reread case reports. You've got to reread interviews, witness interviews. You have to listen to phone calls. You have to watch video. You have to get the cell phone data, you know, reanalyzed or relooked at again. So there's a lot of work that is being done behind the curtains, but unfortunately, it's just not being fruitful right now.
Yeah, I want to go back. By the way, Phil Ramos is not the only one who thinks that the suspect might be dead. There's a special on tonight with Brian Enton, and he's got some amazing profilers who we have on STS, including Ann Burgess, who thinks that this suspect might be dead. I'm going to play that for you in a minute. Shout out to Judy Herbert, came to our event in New Jersey, one of the most generous STSers, once again being generous. Thank you. Very much. Phil Ramos, and I'm getting back to Bob in a second, but from your perspective as a detective, as an investigator, how hard are days like this Sunday? It's Mother's Day, and you don't have an answer for Savannah and Annie, and you don't know where Nancy is. Do you take those particularly personally on days like Mother's Day?
Yeah, sure. Mother's Day, Nancy's birthday, significant dates that are going to cause the trauma to the family, some grief. you got to show humanity, man. You got to give them a shoulder to cry on, and we carry that with us. It keeps us going and keeps us driving, and it's the reason why we do this job, to bring closure to the families. And this is going to be one of those cases. If they don't solve it, every one of those detectives that work this case are going to be thinking about this for the rest of their lives. It's going to haunt them if they don't get anywhere with it. I guarantee you that's the case. It's happened to me, and it'll happen to whoever's working this case if they don't get closure on it.
Mm. Bob, are you surprised? Because it is over $1 million reward and nothing. I mean, the fact that that amount, a seven-figure reward, and still nothing, does that make it especially more unbelievable?
It does. The second that reward went up that high, I assumed, okay, this is what's going to tip the scales against somebody. And I don't disagree with Phil's theory that, you know, if this were more high profile cartel possibly related, that's, you know, a foot soldier who's expendable, and to make a mistake like he made, to be on video and whatever else may have happened that went against what they had, what they wanted to do. And that's why it's either that or because I still think it's also at least two or three people. It would be the quietest group of two or three people of criminals I think any of us have ever seen or heard of. It's just unheard of that there hasn't even been a peep within that community that we're aware of. So between the reward and the likelihood of one of them talking, yeah, it's befuddling to say the least that there hasn't been more going on at this point.
Mm. Look at this, South Carolina Gamecock in North Carolina. Would Sheriff Nanos, Kurt Dabb, to you, hold a presser now, even with no new information? The guy was all over the place the first bunch of days, and now it's like he's become a ghost. We have not heard from him at all, and they put out tweets saying, look, we're not talking. But do you think at this point that they should at least come out and assure the public, hey, we're working on this, and you're seeing – they put out a statement responding to – Kash Patel, the FBI director, saying we're aware that they're bashing us, essentially. But should he come out, just if anything, to say we're still working on this case? We have not forgotten about it.
Well, I mean, that's a question that has two answers, right? Yes, he should, because the people want to know. But no, he shouldn't, because you just don't want to have a press conference just to have a press conference. You're going to hold a press conference, you want to have something important to pass along. You know, I think releasing a statement, you know, maybe, and you've got to look at it from the family too. So as a homicide investigator investigating this case, let's say, I would be in contact with the family 24/7, and I would ask them, the first question I would ask them is, how often do you want me to keep in contact with you? So that I'm not just bothering them, you know, umpteen times a day or umpteen times a week. And along with that is about the press, because Savannah is a public figure. This whole thing has been played out in the public. So I would take into consideration, you know, the family's feelings as well. So yes, he should and could, and no, he shouldn't. And yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Yeah. Bob Krieger, let me just go back over what we watched at NBC piece with Kash Patel going up against Sheriff Chris Nanos. Let's just break that down. So he said that they were willing to fly this DNA out within the first 48 hours, that Pima kept them out, he says, for 4 days. Now, Nanos immediately says, no, we called him a day later. Let's hold it there. Who do we believe? I mean, I don't know. I have no way to know. Do you have any way to know?
I don't think there's any way to know truly. But if you go with that timeline, the following day, they literally showed a picture 3 days later with Nanos and an FBI guy from Tucson standing behind him. So there's a little bit of inconsistency there. What I will say about all of that is, regardless of who's at fault, and you've got the finger pointing at three Spider-Men pointing at each other, you know that meme. Had they played nice together from the beginning, they would probably, I won't say they would be in a different position, because everyone, if there's not a match to the DNA, there's not a match to the DNA. You can't magically make that appear. But you could have had the conversation. I wouldn't have sent the DNA to my lab if you wanted the DNA to go to your lab. I'd have said, well, why is it better to go to Quantico? And they just said this, this, and this. I'm like, you're absolutely right. Here's the DNA. Send it your place. That's where the problems lie in an investigation like this. If you're not on the same page, you're going after a bad guy and you're fighting amongst yourselves, you're not going to solve things quickly and easily in a situation like that. You know, it shouldn't be ego driven. It shouldn't be, I'm better than you, my lab's better than yours. Right. Let's talk about it and let's be able to answer why one is better and let's go with that one. That's all that matters. And regardless of the finger pointing, there was conflict. There was some friction. That's clearly out there now. So that shouldn't have happened. And that's for whatever reasons it did.
Yeah. I mean, Kurt, just to add to that, I mean, then you see Kash Patel saying, well, look, we got the Ring doorbell. He's taking a victory lap. They weren't talking to Google. We did. And that's why we have this image today. And then you get this comment here. Why did they leave the doormat, the shrubbery debris, and the Nest camera doormount behind? These were probably teeming with DNA. Thoughts on that? And if you want to respond to the, you know, match over the arguing match over the Google image.
Well, you know, circling back to what Boff was saying, you know, about the conflict. Yeah, there's conflict between, you know, the heads of the different agencies. But we also have to remember that there was conflict within the Sheriff's Department at that time as well, at that specific time that the search began. So there was a lot of conflict going on. And I think as we all see, conflict hinders investigations. Why'd they leave the doormat, shrubbery debris? Simple answer is, I don't know. Now, I had a homicide I investigated down in Avra Valley, or out in Avra Valley, and a subject got shot by his son, and there was a big boulder, and then he took this huge boulder and, like, dropped it on the dad's head. Now, I can't take the whole boulder. I mean, it weighed, like, a couple hundred pounds. This guy used some implements to get it. So, you know, we took DNA swabs from it. So that's what I'm assuming happened there. They took the DNA swabs off the cement. They probably took the DNA swabs off of the carpet or the doormat. I personally would have collected it. I mean, it's like a bed sheet. If there's blood on it, you're going to collect it. You're just not going to cut a spot out of it. Mm-hmm. But if it's a mattress, you're just going to cut a spot out of it where you see the DNA. Shrubbery and vegetation. I've never really gotten any good luck off of getting DNA from those, but how much do you collect and where do you collect it from? You know, so there's a lot of things, and those things cost money. Just because you're collecting something for DNA processing doesn't mean you're going to be approved to send it. These things are micromanaged at the, you know, the utmost levels. And from what I've heard, you know, we've had captains and lieutenants and chiefs running this show since the beginning. So it doesn't surprise me that things worked out the way they have.
Yeah, Phil Ramos, by the way, super chat from AR Wyoming. Thank you. Applauding the best guests, as always. We are back and back in business here. We were back last week when we were away because we had some videos. People are obsessed with Lizzie Borden. We did a video on that, and a lot of people are watching that. Who knew? I didn't know. Phil, at least the Google you know, the mount that holds that Google camera, that seems like something they should have taken, especially because he was fiddling with it. The suspect was fiddling with it for a while. What about that? Just that one aspect. Why did they not retrieve that?
So we got to think about what the possibility of transfer DNA was, touch DNA. This guy was wearing at least one pair of gloves or at least two pair of gloves. In order to get DNA, your skin, the epithelial cells on your skin have to come in contact with something. Your ridges rubbed against something and left that DNA. The likelihood of DNA being on those shrubs from a guy wearing gloves is virtually zero. We can collect all the stuff that we want to have it examined by our DNA lab, but our DNA lab is going to say, why do you think there's DNA on here? Why did you collect this? If you go and tell one of our scientists, well, this guy was wearing gloves and he grabbed a handful of sagebrush or whatever it was and we want to make sure there's going to be DNA on there. They're going to say, there's not going to be any DNA on it. Gloves don't have DNA on the outside. They'll have them on the inside if they're touching your skin. But sometimes people get confused on what leaves DNA versus what doesn't leave DNA. There's got to be body fluids. There's got to be epithelial cells, skin cells left somewhere that have that DNA. Footwear impressions, unless the guy was handling his shoes barehanded, aren't going to have DNA. So I think there's a little bit of a overreach on what can contain DNA versus what can't contain DNA.
By the way, when we were away last week, there's a Lizzie Borden episode, a Charles Manson episode that I was fascinated by because it's an interview he did in 1981 with Tom Snyder, and Eli Frankel, our guest, did a whole documentary series on Charles Manson and takes you step by step through the dynamic between those two people, and it's wild. Charles Manson requested a bar stool for that interview so he could physically be taller than Tom Snyder. Charles Manson's like 5'4", and Tom Snyder is 6'4". So just all this stuff that was going on behind the scenes is crazy. And then we did a story also about Robert Hansen, the guy. He's an FBI mole. He was a traitor. He was working for Russia, and the original FBI agent who caught all of this and basically outed or made Robert Hansen is a guy named Wayne Barnes, and he was on the show. So if you haven't seen those, check out those video tabs. Also, hit the like and subscribe button, and starting to put weird things on Patreon. My dog Ethel is a cold-blooded killer and attacked what we believe was either a baby goose or a possum. It was hard to tell. And I chewed her out for the murderous act, and that's all on Patreon if you want to. I can't believe how vicious Ethel is, and she's so sweet. She wanted to lick the COE after that. COE is not a fan and made Ethel sleep in the back room, but better Ethel than me. Okay, what COE is also panicking. There's like four or five other videos. We're going to get to them in a second, but Bob Krieger pointed this out to me. Back in 2018, Tucson.com, which is kind of the paper of record, they talk about an incident between the FBI and Sheriff Chris Nanos back then. And it had to do with the misuse of public funds. The FBI was investigating specifically about some cafeterias that were opened and didn't go through the right protocol. Sheriff Chris Nanos' direct quote, back in 2018, if the FBI in Tucson has nothing better to do with their time than investigate a cafe in my station and purchase of a $4,000 refrigerator, that's disappointing. Someone should be looking in D.C. about what the Tucson office is doing with its time and money. And if they need some real policemen to do their jobs, I'll gladly give them Bob Krieger. He said, no, I'll gladly help them out with that, the sheriff said. Bob, what happened here in 2018? And this seems like it really like set the table for the adverse relationship going on today.
So back then, there was an investigation into just misuse of those public funds that we were getting, that we were seizing as an agency, what they were going for, and really how the sheriff's department had probably been using them inappropriately for a while. So the investigation began, and it began because of inconsistencies, things that folks that probably shouldn't be happening. And what it turned out was that the first handpicked chief that the sheriff got when he was gifted the sheriff's position at that time was ultimately indicted on multiple felony counts of RICO charges. He ultimately pled guilty to a misdemeanor. They took a plea bargain. He left the department pretty much in disgrace, but, you know, it was kind of head held high, like we didn't do anything wrong. And that was kind of the start of the Chris Nanos era as sheriff. As one of the other handpicked chiefs was about to be interviewed by the FBI on a Monday, the Sunday before that, he committed suicide in a neighbor's garage. And so all of these things happened. And if you read the full article on that, reporter even says Nanos replied angrily. And I don't think that's a surprise to anyone with what we've seen over the last 100 days now. And so he's always had some contempt for the FBI because of that. He is one not to forget. He is one to hold a grudge. So I think it's safe to say that can the FBI help us? He might be a little more defensive and say, we can do this ourselves. We don't need their help. Look what they did to me in the past. And so that was kind of some of the reasons why or the starting points of the issues with the FBI for the sheriff.
And then, I mean, that goes back to what Phil was talking about with this, the word contempt that you use going on. But Kurt Dabb, what about thank you, Wendy Klarman. People do realize it's a global phenomenon now. Some people send me hate mail. I can't believe you call yourself a global phenomenon. We've got 50 countries. That's a global phenomenon, in my opinion. I don't care if I have one viewer in the 50 other countries. It's still a global phenomenon. But Kurt Dabb, what about this recall effort? And then I'm getting to these videos.
Well, from what I've heard, it's going pretty well as far as the signatures. They needed to get 150,000. And
is Bob Krieger going to be the next sheriff of Pima County? We were talking about this.
There is some scuttlebutt going around. But suffice to say, the recall collection, signature collection is going really well. And hopefully, man, I just wish, like, Chris, if you're listening, you know, you have nothing else to prove. You can ride off into the sunset, retire, cruise around in your brand new C8 Corvette, and just chill for the rest of your life, man. Let the professionals handle the rest of this investigation. Let the professionals handle it.
My only demand is, Bob, if you become sheriff, I demand that you wear your SWAT helmet 24 hours a day. Will you do that?
Just walk absolutely around. Okay. Absolutely. And I'll even wear my old one. So quick helmet story. I got a giant melon. So even my first helmet, when I got on the team in 2001, it was like an old Vietnam era one. And it was the only one big enough for me. I had to keep it through a couple buying cycles because the other ones would just squeeze too much. We're so uncomfortable.
You still have all that? You still have like all your gear? You're allowed to keep
it? As your non-attorney attorney, don't answer that question.
Oh, so okay, thank you. All right, never mind. You don't have to tell me. We'll talk about that.
All the things that were required to be turned back into the department were returned back into the department.
Except for those long guns. Jersey Girl, 5239. Phil, we talked about this. Why have no takers come forward to claim the reward? It's like $1.2 million, Phil Ramos.
Question. Well, there's two ways to answer that. Number one, there's nobody left to claim that reward that we alluded to earlier. The guys are dead. Number two, it's not enough of an incentive that I'm going to claim the reward. The bad guys are going to know who claimed the reward if it's been paid and it was fruitful in the first place. You got to be able to provide information that's going to earn you that reward. The bad guys behind this are going to know who that person was. And, another one bites the dust.
Mm. By the way, while I'm thinking about it, Friday was supposed to be Brendan Banfield, the so-called au pair murder, the love triangle. Was supposed to be a sentencing. They pushed it back now to June 5th. So shoot Carm and I some ideas for Friday, whatever you want Carm to talk about, survivingsurvivor@gmail.com. Tomorrow we're going back to Lynette Hooker, the sailing hooker. She's the missing mother in the Bahamas who was with her husband. The husband said he was staying forever to search, and within like 2 or 3 hours was on a flight to see his ailing mother in Sacramento, California, about as far as you can get from the Bahamas in the United States. And now the Coast Guard is asking for help. So we'll go back to doing that tomorrow. Let me just get rid of this comment. This is now Brian Enton got some amazing criminal minds, including Dr. Ann Burgess, Gary Bricado, and Dr. Casey Jordan, who have all been guests on Surviving the Survivor. I think this is airing on the CW tonight at 9 o'clock to discuss this. And this is one clip. Let's watch it together and we will break it down.
No, I think there's more people involved.
No, but I just had a thought that person may have been eliminated also.
So the person we see at the front door could be dead.
That's correct.
Killed by someone else.
The partner.
Killed by the boss.
Right. By the boss. Yeah. Right. It was well planned. They've gotten away with it. And they pulled a type of case that we've never seen before, right, as far as we know.
I just think that somewhere hidden in here, whoever this guy is at the door, if he is caught, if he's alive and is caught, he will lead down the spider web to the center where you will find somebody who is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Gary Brocato. He has got a penchant for the dramatic, and I love it. Phil Ramos, let's start with you. Ann Burgess saying killed by the boss. She, contrary to most law enforcement, is saying that this was well planned. And you heard Gary Brocato saying this is going to lead to others, a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Both are possibilities. I don't know. You know, we'll go back to why that $1 million hasn't been claimed. That the person who would have enough information to claim that $100 is more afraid of the guys that are going to come after him for claiming that $100 than he, or the $1 million. I'm sorry, to claim that money, than he would be to, you know, hey, yeah, I'll show you where her, excuse my frankness, but her body remains are, and give me the $1 million. That I think that's a very remote possibility at this point in time, because it's been so long. That if that was going to happen, I would have expected it to happen by now. And I'm still with the doc. She's spot on. She's a genius, man. What do you want? The guy's dead.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Ann Burgess has 3 years, I believe, on my mother, who's turning 87, and she's still at it. It's amazing. And the energy she has, it's unreal. Melissa Navone, I don't think they got away with it because it was well planned. It was a botched investigation from day one. There you go. This person asking, what is on Carm's mind? What are the latest topics that interest her? Carm likes anything psychological with a psychological component. There's a story that our good friend Vesper shot my way, which I like. It's disturbing, of course, because it's true crime. But this guy who murdered his wife and then took off. He got out on $1 million bond and took off to Canada somehow, and then got to Milan, and he's now being held in Milan. This all happened in Houston, an interesting case. So maybe we'll take a look at that. But let me know. Email survivingthesurvivor@gmail.com. Here's now another clip from this same show. Let's take a look, and we will dissect it once again.
She knows in some way. Or that knows her in some way?
Knows her in some way. Yes, I don't think that, I wouldn't think that Nancy Guthrie knew this person. I don't think you'd have the crime scene that we know happened, that she was bleeding from, so something happened.
I agree. This person knew her. I don't think she knew this person. Knew of her. And it could have been, we have to consider, it could have been somebody who saw her on the Today Show with her daughter Savannah, maybe not even have met her. Could have been an Uber driver that she didn't leave a big enough tip for. Could have been any of hundreds of service workers. I mean, she's been in this house since the 70s.
Kurt Dabb, I mean, these are the types of conversations you're probably having with your colleagues when you're trying to solve, you know, could it have been an Uber driver? Could it have been someone from the restaurant? But these expert criminal profilers, and I got to be honest, I'm not exactly sure how they come to these conclusions. I mean, maybe I could do a show with Ann, but you heard him say that they know each other in some way, and then kind of corrected it to say that the suspect knew Nancy or knew of Nancy, but Nancy had no idea who this person was. You tend to agree with that hypothesis?
Yeah, I think I proposed that pretty early on, you know, when I started talking about multiple, you know, individuals. And when you're planning something like this that appears to be pretty well thought out. And I agree the investigation was messed up from day one, from the get-go. But it, man, I just lost my train of thought.
Happens to me all the time. While you think about that, Train.
wonderful TBIs.
let me go to Phil on this. I mean, Phil, this is the absolute biggest question. Three letter, why? It's just the oddest case, right? I mean, first of all, do you think this is this the biggest missing persons case that you can recall in this country? Certainly one of them. I mean,
yeah, it's right up there with the top five. That it's gone this long without some kind of resolution, definitely. Yeah.
By the way, you're going to hear from Elizabeth Smart in a minute. She was on CNN today, but go ahead, Phil. Yeah, but why? I mean, why do this?
That's the question, man. That's what everybody's asking. Why Nancy? So, I mean, it's a matter of, we're not going to know that until we find the bad guys, because The motive is behind everything, obviously, clearly. It's a matter of who had the motive to do this to her and why. I mean, there's all kinds of speculation. Maybe it was related to Savannah's work. Maybe it was related to the possibilities are endless right now because we just don't have enough information to eliminate those other possibilities. It's just one that's going to keep these guys shaking their head until they figure it out.
All right, here's another one here. This is about the possibility of more suspects. And I think everyone at this stage agrees this was not a one-person deal, but let's look at this clip.
Our kind of quality is interesting also and suggests to me a difference in intelligences, some schemer behind the scenes and this character who was just sort of hired or asked to do this. I think we would all agree this is not a professional that we saw here. I also don't believe this person worked alone.
So you think there's more people involved?
I think there is a little group of people, and that's great because the more people involved, the better for getting it solved.
Bill Ramos, what about that? I mean, more. It's funny. I'm not sure. I'm curious now. How do they come to all these conclusions? But again, I was Gary Bricado, who's a brilliant guy. He used to come on my show. Gary, come back. You got an invitation. Gary's got some restrictions, I believe. So, but look, he says it's a group of people, and the more people, the better, right? I mean, because then there's more ways to get tripped up. I mean, that part of it is true, Phil. But look, he said it's not well planned. It's not a professional.
Yeah, I concur. I don't think there was a whole lot of planning behind this. You know, some of the strangest, most difficult murders we have to solve are the whodunits. You know, the more planning that goes into a murder, the more mistakes are going to be made and the more chances you're going to find someone who's got knowledge or part of that plan. The drive-by road rage shootings without anybody seeing anything are very difficult to solve. And this is about as big a whodunit as you're going to get. And it's going to take a break. It's going to take somebody coming forward with legitimate, corroboratable information to solve it. And that's what they're waiting for. Yeah, that was more than just the bad guy in the video. There was at least two other people, in my view. But, you know, I've been wrong before, and I could be wrong again.
Phil's never wrong. The last factual thing, Kurt Dabb, coming back to you, if your memory can hang on, from Jay Carver. The last factual thing that can be verified as far as a Nancy sighting is the Uber driver who delivered her to Annie Tomaso's house. I mean, again, I mean, I asked you this earlier, but I don't know. Do you have to just keep kind of going back to that point and saying, well, maybe this Uber driver knows something more? Can we ask them more questions? I mean, are you constantly reassessing the situation?
Yeah, I'm reassessing the situation, the interviews and the interactions with that Uber driver, with any of the pool people, delivery drivers, Tomaso, Annie, you know, they were some of the last people to see them. So I'm going to be combing over those daily until something shows up. And back to the question that I forgot to answer before is, yeah, she may not have known that individual, but I guarantee you that individual knew her. And I guarantee you that individual did a lot of recons of the residents, getting down patterns of life. Whether or not the entire thing was professional, I think some parts of it probably were.
This now is a neighbor. I'm not 100% sure what this is, but there's also a relatively new story out there about a recent prowler in the neighborhood. But I'm going to play this, and then we'll discuss that on the flip side. And then in a few minutes, we'll get some final thoughts. Is there audio on this? Okay, so this is just a video. So this is the guy. This is a new mass prowler who was reportedly caught on this surveillance video in Nancy Guthrie's, or very close to her home, Bob Krieger. The man wore gloves. You've seen him right here, wears gloves and a mask, arrives in this grayish vehicle, and he's allegedly seen stealing plants. This is all going down in the Catalina foothills. I hope this is not your house, Bob Krieger, but there is no audio. Tucson's a weird place. I don't need to hide that. I've said that to you guys. Mm-hmm. It's one of the weirder places I've ever been. I love it, but it is weird as hell. But in this, on any other, you know, in any other period of time, you would just chalk it up to a cactus dealer. But you have to take a really close look at this now in light of the fact that this guy is sort of geared up with gloves and a mask.
I don't necessarily think so. I'm pretty sure dudes out stealing cactus and the pretty pots that they're in are not planning home invasions. I could be wrong, but this is completely different. It doesn't take a genius to put, if you don't, you know, every porch pirate grabbing Amazon packages should be doing it in masks and gloves. That's just the reality of what bad guys do. They know what to do. Now, it doesn't say that they shouldn't really look into this. But like I said, this is just a weird Tucson thing. Why? It's funny because I read something on the neighborhood app the other day about someone getting their cactus stolen. And I'm like, who would do that? Well, apparently we know now who would do it.
Yeah.
And I hope they don't know where I live, because my father-in-law loves the plants and there's dozens and dozens of them around the house. So I guess I have to re-up my my video stuff to make sure it's cleaner. But yeah, this is nothing more than a lead. Follow up on it, but it's surprising that they're stealing cactus, but not surprising how they're dressed, because bottom line is they don't want to get caught for whatever reason. And this is probably a very personal, I guarantee that person knows the person they're stealing from.
Or they're stealing mescaline, you know, peyote.
Really? Wait, you think they know this person?
Oh yeah, this is a very personal crime.
Really?
That's very intentional. That's to piss the homeowners off. Absolutely.
Who knew? I had no idea. But let me ask you a follow-up, Bob, because I'm a sick, twisted individual. Let's say you're home and you're on your, you know, on the couch watching mm-hmm. some heavy metal video, and you notice your alert goes off, and you see this guy on your front property taking cacti. Do you greet him at that point? Would you go out there, Bob Krieger, as a SWAT commander? What would happen in this situation?
I would not recommend most of the people watching to go greet him, but yes, I am going to go greet him.
Really?
Absolutely. But I also have the experience to stay calm and talk to him. And no, I can't, even though technically Arizona law would allow me to threaten the use of deadly force in a situation. We won't go down that road. I might be armed, but he wouldn't know that. We'd have some conversations, and I would have called 911 definitely before I went out there. I would recommend to all the viewers, call 911, let the professionals handle the cactus thieves, because it's not worth getting in. You talked about road rage earlier. I think Phil brought it up.
Yeah.
You know, it's not worth you putting yourself in that jeopardy, because you don't know what the motive of these people are. He could be armed, and you out there, get away from my cactus, and the next thing you know, shots are ringing out. And it's so unfortunate. That's the reality of the world that we live in today. Mm-hmm. So that being said, you know, there's a difference based on experience here of how the how it should be covered.
By the way, I have a like a week's worth of show ideas. Who at STS Nation, Carm has been to a firing range before. She's got a bit of a streak in her. She would love to learn how to become a sniper. What if Carm and I go to Tucson for a week and Bob trains her? Who would watch that? Email us, survivingthesurvivor@gmail.com. Would you be willing to train my 86, almost 87-year-old mother how to shoot Bob Krieger?
In a heartbeat. Joel, there's really not much more I want to do in life since I've started and got to know you, is to meet your mom. There is so much going on there I think is amazing. Uh-huh. And if she wants to go shoot with us, let's go shoot. I'd be happy to do it.
COE, I think that's going to have to happen. We'll do a week. We'll also do some like Nancy Guthrie stuff. But who doesn't want to see Carm with a former SWAT commander? And maybe, Bob, you can bring some of your old teammates along, and we'll teach Carm how to handle cacti stealers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Phil Ramos. You're in Vegas. There's cacti in Vegas. If someone was stealing cacti from your front lawn and your alert was triggered, with your experience, would you greet the cacti stealer?
Yeah. Myself and Mr. Smith and Wesson, but I'm scratching my head at that one, man. I mean, we have some pretty petty crimes out here, you know, porch pirates and stuff like that. But I can't remember one time cactus being stolen. And we got a lot of decorative cactus out here because everybody's into the zero landscaping thing. You can't plant grass in your front yard anymore. So everything's, you know, small plants. I don't even know what to make of that, man. It's kind of crazy.
There are a lot of crazy people in the desert. Phil, this is from you, from perhaps our most generous member here, the Super Chat. Judy Herbert, huge fan of all panel members. Question to my fellow native, who is a legend in Vegas. That would be Phil Ramos. Were you involved in the investigation of the Teddy Binion M and or OJ arrest from the Palace Station?
I helped on the Binion case, interview witnesses, but didn't have anything to do with OJ.
Look at Carm. She's chiming in. I have proof that I did a bullseye. Carm, send me the photo. I'll put it on Instagram. Bullseye is one word, by the way. As a non-American, I'm unfamiliar with issues such as arise with Sheriff Nanos, but this panel of extraordinary law enforcement officers is inspiring all exceptional men. Thank you. And here in America, we've got the best law enforcement in the world. You got guys like these three men. And Bob Krieger wears a helmet and will stand in front of the president of the United States. Takes a certain kind of guy to do that. Those guys hopped right up. So one other person who had some stuff to say today about this whole case was Elizabeth Smart. She was abducted at just 14 years old. It was back in June of 2002. I think it was it happened at knife point, but I think it was 9 months. 9 months. She was, physically and sexually assaulted, which is tough to even fathom. But this is her today speaking, I think, to Erin Burnett on CNN.
Thinking about it with Nancy Guthrie and being missing. And, you know, when you were missing and the reason everyone knows your face, everyone wondered. And then it was, well, it's been months and maybe the worst has happened. And you came back and here you are. There's new surveillance footage. There's, you know, everyone's wondering what could possibly have happened with Nancy Guthrie. Do you think there's any chance, and I know obviously I'm not asking this forensically or anything, but because you had been through a time where maybe in your own mind you didn't know if you were going to live, or to be gone for so long, do you think it's possible that she could still have gotten through it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She could absolutely still be alive. I mean, there are cases that span many more years than mine does, and they came back alive. I mean, and we're talking years and years. So she absolutely could still be alive. There, I mean, of course, there is the alternative, but until we know, we have to keep looking until she deserves either way to be brought home.
Hope springs eternal. That is Elizabeth Smart saying that she thinks there is a chance Nancy Guthrie could be alive. You know, Phil Ramos has said, unfortunately, he does not believe that to be the case. Most people don't believe it to be the case. Can this panel come on weekly? I'll have to talk to them and have to negotiate, jack up their salaries. But Kurt Dabb is a retired Pima County homicide detective. If you don't know, Pima County is the home of Tucson, which is the epicenter of this entire case. Kurt, thank you for your service and all the work you do and the great insight you give us. I think it is something that we all hope for, that she is alive and miracles do happen. I think you have to be realistic and say it's probably very unlikely. As we approach day 100 here, 5 days away, what needs to happen with this investigation? Do they need a lucky break? What has to happen here to solve this case, Kurt?
Yeah, as far as, you know, her still being alive, I don't believe so. You just have to look at it. And it goes back to being multiple people. If she was alive still, she's in mid-80s, nearly non-ambulatory, needs medication. Logistically, that's a nightmare. I'm not holding out hope. But yeah, a lucky break needs to happen. Just something needs to happen. And I know the detectives are working night and day. And I'll say it again, like I said, you know, probably the last time I was on a few weeks ago, I truly believe we're going to get to the bottom of this. It's going to be solved. Maybe, you know, sans one or two bad guys, but someone's going to be held accountable. And I truly think that, you know, the case is going to be cracked. Whether that comes from dogged, you know, police work or luck, I don't think it really matters, especially to the family.
Look at this comment here. Thank you, Kurt. Kayla Robbie Nest. I'm so proud of the older PCSD. Kurt, my dad, Carl Kapferer, said you were his rookie back in the day, not calling you old. Just love this panel. My favorite, 34 years in Tucson. And Joel, this place is odd. It is a small, beautiful community. Tell us a little bit about Carl Kapferer.
I've got a great story.
Kurt, go for it.
I've got a great story about Carl. So I was a brand new rookie deputy, and I remember watching an episode of Cops when I was growing up, and one of the calls that they were on where there was a vehicle that was going in a circle, the steering wheel was stuck, and it was just going in a circle, and cops show up, and they're like, how the hell are we going to get this car stopped? And one of them's like, oh, I know. I'll just step in the middle, and when it comes around, I'll go into the window and, you know, put it in park and shut it off. So I'm sitting at our substation, and Carl gave me, he wrote me up a memorandum of recognition for this, and he was just a deputy. He didn't have to do it, but yeah, I was a dumb rookie, so he was probably doing it in jest. But yeah, we got a call about a car down the street. It was a pickup truck, and it was driving in a circle in the middle of the intersection. The driver of the vehicle was outside of it, like, what am I doing? What's happening? And so I'm all excited. I'm a rookie. You know, I want to go to any call. And I get there, and I see this truck doing a circle. And just like I saw in the Cops episode, right, it's muscle memory. I jumped in the center, jumped in the truck, put it in park, and went on to the next call. And yeah, Carl was a great guy. I got into a pretty crazy pursuit. He was a good dude. I love that guy.
Wow. Bob, what are your recollections of Carl Kapferer? Sounds like you were a rookie too. And your final thoughts here tonight.
As far as Carl goes, good dude. He was, I was on a few years before he came on. I remember a good fight down near Prince and Flowing Wells where he was taking some time to put some gloves on, and I'm rolling around on the ground with this dude with there's a lot of blood flowing. And I kind of looked at him, and there was another current deputy, maybe a lieutenant at this point, who was with them, and they were both putting gloves on as new guys. And I guess they still had that old school mentality. And I'm like, what are you guys waiting for? Give me a hand here.
Yeah.
And then another time where he got into, unfortunately, a collision where I believe he broke an arm or a leg right at Ina and Oracle. And I was a sergeant, got there right away, and we're like pulling guns. His guns were flown out of his car because he was hit on duty and just being transported. So it's little things like that that stick into your head. But it's always good to hear those names from the past. What I'll say about that specific message was, back in those days, if you asked Carl what the Pima County Sheriff's Department was about, the pride that the deputies took, the respect that it had in the community, and it's dwindled. That is not the same today. And I won't blame it on any one thing or any one person, but, you know, leadership matters. And the leadership back then is definitely different than the leadership now. And cops want leaders. They want folks who they can look up to and respect, and they will do anything for those guys and gals. They will put their lives on the line every single day. And the further the agency gets away from that mindset, and I have talked at length with a lot of people who are still there, and Aaron Cross, I know, Joel, you, I don't know if you've ever interviewed Aaron or not, but we talk.
He's been on the show.
About that. Our goals are the same. We want to get this agency back to what it was 10, 15 years ago when deputies like Carl Kapferer were here working. And a change in leadership, it's unfortunate, it's necessary at this point. It really is to get back to that. So the men and women who are deputies for the next 20 and 30 years can have that smile on their face like I still do about those times when I was rolling around at Prince and Flowing Wells with you know these new deputies are like, what do I do? And I'm like, you help me, you punch this dude, we'll get blood off of us later. That's what we want to get back to. So that's kind of my final thoughts.
What happens when you get into like a street fight like that with a perp and you end up like, I assume the other guy was bloody, Bob, but if you're bloodied up, you have to like, is there like a protocol? Do you have to go to like get checked out by at the hospital? Like, what do you do?
Well, the first protocol is always camera before care, because you got to tell good stories.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And especially today, like back then I did, it wasn't my blood. I didn't do anything. I washed up somewhere and we moved. I had blood on my uniform for the rest of the shift, but now there's all kinds of ICA forms and it's the right thing to do just because of all the transmittable things and things like that. Everything evolves. And we want to make sure that the deputies, the officers, if something pops up in 5 or 10 years, they can go back and you've done source testing with the suspects and things like that, just to make sure there's no, you know, funky things going on with them either.
Look at this, Joel. What makes it weird? Kurt Dabb, what makes it? I mean, I think everyone can agree. I don't know. It's the darkness, the desert. It's, I mean, if you ever saw Breaking Bad, a lot of these shows that take place, there's just like a Kurt, what makes it weird?
What makes what weird?
Tucson, your home.
Tucson, oh my gosh. I've been out here 26 years. The first thing that made it weird, I arrived here April 1st of 1999, and I left 8 feet of snow in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I arrived to Tucson, and it was snowing as I got here. So that's the weird, the first weird thing that happened. But, you know, it's a very eclectic town. There's a lot of artists here. There's a lot of creators here. And there's a lot of outdoorsmen here, outdoors women. It's a small town, or a bigger town, but it has a very small town feel to it. And each geographic area of the town has its own little flavor to it. So I like it. And yeah. I'm from a small town of like, I don't know, 5,000 people. So I don't feel too out of place here.
Yeah. It's a great place, though. Like, it's a great place to raise a family, great place to live. Just also, I think there's it's just like the desert. You've got this transient population, people coming in, coming out. We end with the godfather of true crime, who also comes from a desert habitat, Las Vegas, Nevada. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Phil, are you allowed to share where you were? And you sent me some photos. I don't want to like... You allowed to tell us where you were? Tell us what that was. That was cool. Phil sent me some photos. If he gives me permission, I'll post them.
Yeah.
I think I'll put them in Patreon for you guys.
I went to the very last Gathering of Nations, a huge powwow in Albuquerque. 50,000 natives were there, and it was just really cool. It was touching to see that many natives, indigenous people, gathered doing what we usually do at powwows, doing dancing competitions, drum circles. Gathering of Nations is the biggest one ever in North America. And it was the last one for reasons we don't understand. We don't know why the organizers have said, this is going to be the last one. They called it the last dance because one of the big things they do at the powwows is do native dancing. And it was really cool. It was very inspiring. You can look it up on the internet, either Gathering of Nations or GON, and that it sent chills up my back just to be there.
Yeah, it's really cool. Carmela is my mom, huge fan of Native American culture, and she was like, wow, I want to go. And then we found out this was the last one, but Phil said there might be something, so we'll see. But Phil, your final thoughts on this? We're coming up on 100 days. Do you still have a belief that this case will be solved?
Yeah, it'll be solved one way or another. You know, like Kurt said, it's going to be solved. It's just a matter of when that one break comes in, when the one person who's holding back for whatever reason decides he's going to pick up the phone and says, I can't deal with this anymore. This is what happened. This is what I know. It may even be someone who doesn't even want the reward. You know, we've seen that happen in the past, but that's what it's going to take at this point. And they're just going to keep plugging away at what they have. Every time a new tip comes in, they're going to follow up on it. And when the tips dry up, then they start going over the other things. And People have said, is this a cold case? No, it's not cold, but it's getting cool. But it's not going to be a cold case until there's absolutely nothing left to follow up on.
There you have it. Where there are detectives, there is hope. So hopefully you see there better days. Nancy Guthrie with Savannah Guthrie on the set of today's show. And if you watch this show, you found out that Savannah left the show today abruptly. We don't know why. We'll stay on top of that. But very insightful. We're back 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Lynette Hooker, the woman who went overboard in the Bahamas, we're going to follow up on that. I have reached out back out to her daughter to see if she wants to join us. But we have three new amazing detectives coming on tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern. Love you, America. Love you, Tucson, Pima County. Don't love you that much, Chris Nanos. Get the job done. And love you, Las Vegas. We will see you tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern. Guests, stick around one second.